All right, what's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk, Friday edition of the show here on Sportsnet 650, your home of the Canucks. Canucks Talk, of course, brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. I'm coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. As I mentioned, Friday edition of the show. And yes, it is just me today. Drancer flying out. He's going to cover the remainder of this road trip for the Vancouver Canucks. So he'll be at the game in Philly tomorrow, and then as they wrap up in Chicago as well. So no Drancer on the show today. I'll be on my own for the first hour, but I do have Kevin Woodley joining me on the phone at 12:30. And then I'm very excited for this, filling in as co-host for Drancer in the final hour of the show from 1 to 2 today. Landon Ferraro, of course, Canucks analyst. You see on TV, you hear him here, former NHL player. Landon Ferraro is going to be in studio with me from 1 to 2. So I'm really excited about that. And honestly, get your text in. If you got questions specifically for Landon, send them in now and I can flag them. And if we have some time in the final hour towards the end of the show, we can run some of those questions past him. 650, 650, of course, is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Get those questions in for me or for Landon Ferraro, and we'll get to them later on in the show. So that's how it's going to look today. 12:30, Kevin Woodley, 1 to 2 in studio with Landon Ferraro, and I'm excited for this one. I hope everyone's staying dry out there. It is a disgusting day. It's going to be a disgusting weekend, but hey, at least the Canucks won last night, so let's get right in to the whiteboard.
All right now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, October 18th, starting with the headlines. And of course, the headline is, in their fourth game of the season, the Canucks get their first win of the season. It went to overtime again, already 3 out of 4 overtime games for the Canucks. This time they come out on top 3-2, thanks to a wicked, wicked JT Miller overtime goal. He's had a lot of highlight reel goals, a lot of extremely impressive goals, a lot of overtime goals in his tenure with the Canucks. Man, that was an exceptional effort, individual effort by JT Miller to win the Canucks the game last night in Florida. Entertaining game. I really enjoyed that one, especially with third period. I mean, I don't know how Rick Tocchet felt about it. Obviously didn't get a ton of post-game commentary from him with the lack of media on this road trip. I imagine he thought it was a little too wide open, a little too much back and forth. Not a perfect performance by any stretch, but a pretty entertaining one nonetheless. And of course, it helps that the Canucks come out on top with that elusive first victory of the season. And I definitely think if you're looking at this game top to bottom for the Canucks, there are meaningful things to be excited about, steps forward from the first three games. I think there's also some things that are very much still areas of concern that have carried over from those first three games, which were losses. But if we're just evaluating why the Canucks won, why was last night different than their first three efforts of the season? Why were they able to finally take home those 2 points? Well, there's really just one reason. One reason easily stands out above all the other ones, and that's Quinn Hughes. The Canucks won that game because Quinn Hughes was far and away the best player on the ice. And again, obviously I know JT Miller had the phenomenal goal in overtime to actually win it. I don't want to discount that. That was a game-breaking type of moment from a game-breaking type of player in JT Miller. But you look at the totality of the game, 60-plus minutes to whenever JT Miller scored in overtime, Quinn Hughes was the difference maker. Again, he was, shift after shift, the best player on the ice. And I'm sure you've had a chance to hear the stats last night in the postgame show, earlier today on Halford and Brough. A goal off a great slap shot, by the way, from Quinn Hughes. That, man, how far has that shot come since we saw Quinn Hughes come into the league a few years ago? A goal off a great slap shot, an assist on the JT Miller overtime winner. 9 shots on goal for Quinn Hughes. And of course, that's been kind of an early season talking point. All of these shot attempts for Quinn Hughes, but not a lot of them getting through, not a lot of them hitting the net. Well, he solved that in a big way yesterday. 9 shots on goal. Those are the kind of headline stats, the minutes, all of that. But I think to really understand the dominance of Quinn Hughes and what he can be at his best, the reason why he's the defending Norris Trophy winner, it's not just about the points and the shots on goal. It was his shift-by-shift control of the game, the way he dictated what that game looked like. And when he's at the top of his game, as he was last night, the Canucks are just a different team with him on the ice. Just look at shots, right? So I'm not even getting into, you know, Corsi or expected goals, high danger chance, anything like just shots. Shots at 5-on-5 last night with Quinn Hughes on the ice, 21-9 in favor of the Canucks. And you can say all you want about, oh, they didn't have Barkov, they didn't have Tkachuk. That's still a really well-coached, really hard-working Florida Panthers team with a lot of good players in the lineup that knows how they want to play. With Quinn Hughes on the ice, the Canucks dominated the shot clock. Not close. 21-9. That's a beatdown when Quinn Hughes was out there. And again, it's not as if that's incidental. That's because of what he's able to do. So 21-9 with Quinn Hughes on the ice for the Canucks in terms of shots at 5-on-5. Without Quinn Hughes, 8-18 for the Florida Panthers. Almost a complete reversal from what they were doing with Hughes on the ice. 8-18 with him on the bench. I don't think there's any other way to sum up, again, beyond the goal, beyond the assist, beyond the shots. There's no other way to better sum up the overall impact, the overall effect that Quinn Hughes has on a game when he's playing like that, than looking at the discrepancy in those two numbers. That's not just a Norris level of impact. That's a Hart Trophy type of impact. Honestly, that's not hyperbole. That's what Connor McDavid does when he's at his best. That's what Nathan MacKinnon does when he's at his best. Auston Matthews, you go down the line. Nikita Kucherov. Those are the types of players who are capable of almost single-handedly, essentially single-handedly, causing that big a swing in the performance of their teams consistently. Quinn Hughes is absolutely in that caliber of player. So hard for a defenseman to win the Hart. I get that. But again, that is a Hart Trophy level of impact, level of performance, level of effect for Quinn Hughes. We saw that last night. And man, Hughes's performance was exactly what the Canucks needed right now. There's a lot else we can get into, and I'm really excited to dig into some of the other things, other storylines for the Canucks through the early part of the season here with Landon Ferraro later, right? We can talk all we want about the bottom two pairs on the blue line, the puck moving, the depth, how are the new players fitting in? Where should these guys play in the lineup? All of that, the goaltending situation. We can talk about all of that, but none of it, as important as it might be, none of it's really going to matter in the long run unless the Canucks' best players are consistently elite. It's not going to happen every night. We've already seen that. We know that that's not how any player in the NHL operates, being elite literally every night. But there has to be a level of consistency that they're hitting that level for the Canucks to get where they want to go, to meet their ambitions, to be Stanley Cup contenders. And it's no secret, it's no mystery who those guys are, right? It's Thatcher Demko, Elias Pettersson, JT Miller, and Quinn Hughes. Those are the four guys who have to be elite for the Canucks ultimately to be contenders. And let's just go through that list, right? Demko, Pettersson, Miller, Hughes. Well, Demko's injured, so they're not getting anything from him right now. That's a question mark. We don't have a lot of information about it. Who knows when we'll see him? Who knows what he's going to look like? So already that's one of the four, at least for right now, out of the picture. Could he be elite by the time the playoffs roll around? Yes, absolutely. That is absolutely on the table. I'm not writing it off. But in the here and now, obviously, he's not giving you that. That's one of the four. Pettersson, we all know. We'll talk about it more later, I'm sure. Don't worry. We'll have our daily Elias Pettersson conversation. But obviously, has not been anywhere near elite since January. That's a long time ago now. So that's a question mark. You're wondering, when are we going to start seeing it? Are we going to start seeing it? I still think we will. But the question of when is a big one. JT Miller, two big clutch goals, and I don't want to discount those, right? Those are point-earning goals. The tying goal against Calgary to get them to overtime, the game winner against the Panthers last night. That's an extra 2 points in the standings because of JT Miller individual efforts for the Canucks. So I don't want to discount those, but through four games, I don't think we're seeing that kind of peak level of JT Miller play-driving, shift-by-shift impact that we saw yesterday, or last season. I think that's fair. So that's three guys who, some of them have had moments, some of them are out of the lineup, some of them are lost, not necessarily doing that elite performance. That leaves Quinn Hughes. And I think his game last night was the first time one of the Canucks' top players turned in a truly elite performance, a superstar caliber performance. And it's no coincidence that the first time the Canucks get that superstar performance at the top of their lineup, they also get their first win of the season. Now, it can't be Quinn Hughes every night. They're going to need, beyond just the clutch moments, consistent impact from JT Miller. They desperately need a much better version of Elias Pettersson. They're going to need Thatcher Demko back at some point. Quinn Hughes did it last night. You know he's capable of doing it. And again, you want the depth turnaround. You want them to figure out the puck moving, all of those things. But it has to be the Canucks' best players driving the bus the way they did last night. And look, it's a big win. And I have no compunction about saying that. Yes, I get it. It was game four of the season. I know how early it is. They still have 78 games left on the schedule. I understand all of that. So maybe it feels a little ridiculous to call it a big win, but we talked yesterday about the danger of letting a slow start snowball turn into an avalanche. All of a sudden you're buried and you look up as November 1st and you're 8 points out of a playoff spot and the season feels hopeless. Well, they stopped that last night. Now they're 500. Now they have a chance to make any little stumble out of the gate that they had in those first three losses in a row. They have a chance to make those a distant memory in a hurry. They got a chance to breathe. They have a bit of a chance to reset. Hey, now they can turn this into a good start. Right? They go into Philly tomorrow. Now, I know Philly, always a tough matchup for them, but that's a sneaky tough game for the Flyers, too. The Flyers have been out west all season. That game against the Canucks was their season opener. They've been out here playing Alberta, playing in Seattle last night. They lost in Seattle last night. So the Canucks are going to have the much easier travel situation going into that game in Philly. And, you know, one of the things I think we've learned as teams start to study the sleep science side of things more in the NHL is that first game home after a long, especially a long cross-continent road trip, that's almost like another road game. So that's a tough matchup for the Flyers, not chalking it up for the Canucks, but that's an opportunity against a team that has given them fits to go into their building and maybe have a little bit more of an advantage than you would expect just looking at that game individually on the schedule. Then they play Chicago. Again, you don't want to chalk it up. But just the flip in vibes based on that win last night, I really don't think you can understate how significant it is. Now they have a chance for this to be a successful road trip, to be sitting in the standings after five or six games, and all of a sudden you're not just surviving, you're not just treading water, they have a chance to be feeling good about themselves now, thanks to what Quinn Hughes did, and thanks to that JT Miller goal last night in Florida. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can get your thoughts in. I'll read them throughout the course of the show. This one comes in. I gotta say, these stats, he's talking about Quinn Hughes's dominance, are both very exciting and very scary. Does our little house of cards completely collapse without our boy Huggy? They need other guys, right? They need it consistently from JT Miller, and they desperately need it from Elias Pettersson. You're absolutely right. It cannot be Quinn Hughes for 82 games and into the playoffs. He's great, but no player's that great, right? Connor McDavid has Leon Draisaitl. You go down the list. We all know it. The truly great teams have more than one elite player capable of taking over and winning games. The Canucks should have that. In theory, you can look at the players and say, yeah, they have those guys, especially until Thatcher Demko is out, though. It's got to be more than just Quinn Hughes. The clutch moments are great from JT Miller. Again, not taking anything away from that. When he's on the ice without Quinn Hughes, though, the underlying numbers don't look great. Same thing for Elias Pettersson. So those guys still both need to find a higher level. Patterson's in a different conversation, though I completely understand that, than where JT Miller is right now. Just some other quick thoughts, and obviously lots of time throughout the course of the show to get into some of the other takeaways from last night's game. I mean, Kevin Lankinen was excellent. Clearly outperforming Artur Shelov's right now, at least to my, you know, untrained goalie eye. Is it enough to end the 50-50 split that we've seen so far? I don't know. But I think we're probably one subpar performance from Shelov's away from that, right? If Shelov starts in Philly, we'll see. They're not practicing today, so we don't know. We'll see, I guess, in warm-up or game day skate tomorrow, who gets the start. If Shelov's isn't great, and then you go back to Lankinen and he's good again, at that point, I think Lankinen is pretty clearly cementing himself as at least the temporary starter holding down the fort until Thatcher Demko comes back. Just before we go in to the broadsheet section of the whiteboard here. I mean, as I said, look, we got to do our daily Pettersson check-in, right? What would a Canucks sports radio program be right now in October 2024 without a daily Elias Pettersson check-in? And look, he's in such a fascinating position to try to analyze because undeniably, that was his best game of the season. But we also all know what a low bar that is, right? So he did some really good things. Had the scoring chance in tight off the crossbar, set up some really nice scoring chances, I thought. Overall, looked more confident on the puck, more decisive, more willing to try some things. But obviously, it's still not good enough, right? Too many wasted plays with the puck still as well. He had the nice ones, but there are a lot of other ones you kind of thought, I don't really know what's going on there. That, like, I guess the way I would frame that game last night from Elias Pettersson is that needs to be Pettersson's B or maybe even C game, right? So it's okay. Look, I get, again, as I said, even the best players in the league, they're not going to have their A game 82 games a year. That's not how it works. If that's Pettersson when he's off his game, but he's consistently on his game otherwise, you can live with that, right? It's not as if he was a total zero out there. He was doing some things. He blocked some shots, all of those. He was engaged. But the problem is it's been so long since we've seen Pettersson's A game that it's hard to get excited about his B or C game. And it's going to feel like that until he gives us 10, 15 games of his A game. We need to see that type of performance. We need to see him go out there and have a Quinn Hughes type of performance, Quinn Hughes type of impact in one of these games. Even just having those individual moments like JT Miller's having would go a long, long way to rebuilding that confidence in Elias Pettersson. Now, having said all of that, I do think last night was the first game for Pettersson that I can remember in a long time where it looked like legitimate progress. I know there's been other moments where it's kind of like, if you squint and you really bend over backwards, can you see him taking some steps forward? But you've really had to try to see it. Last night, I don't think he had to try to see the progress. It was there. It was felt like the first game you could honestly say, hey, if he keeps playing like that, points will come. Not that it's enough, but at least he was doing things to contribute, things that you can see leading to production. Progress, but a long, long way to go and a much higher ceiling still to hit, a much higher level that he needs to get to on a consistent basis for Elias Pettersson. All right, let's go to the broadsheet now as we continue through the whiteboard. Rick Dhaliwal, of course, making his regular weekly hit on the Halford and Brough show. And all of a sudden, with all of these goalie deals in recent weeks in the NHL, the subject of Thatcher Demko's next contract. Now, he's eligible for an extension after this season. Obviously, he's got another year beyond that. So it's not a front burner issue by any stretch, but we all know how good Thatcher Demko can be when he's at the top of his game, right? Archer Seelovs, if you were thinking, hey, he's going to be the goalie of the future, let Demko walk and give it to Seelovs, I think we're also seeing how hard the adjustment process can be for a young goalie coming into the NHL. So there's kind of this flurry of interest in what does that even look like if you're trying to get something done with Thatcher Demko. Anyway, here's Czech TV's Rick Dhaliwal and Halford and Brough earlier today.
I know it's a little early, what Demko is going to get on his new deal, but you can't ignore the last 2 weeks. Ottinger, Allmark, Swayman, all getting $8.2 million per year. The goalie market is shifting right now in a big, big way. Teams are saying lock up your number one guys. Obviously, Demko's contract's up after next year, and he can start talking with the Canucks this summer. He's a Vezina finalist. He can easily demand the same as Ottinger, Allmark, and Swayman, but he's got to get back to playing games. Of the three goalies, Ottinger has played the most games in the past 3 years. He played 62 games 2 years ago. The good news for Demko is if he continues his struggles with injuries, is that Allmark's high for games played in the season is 49. Swayman's is 44. Despite those low numbers in games played, Allmark and Swayman still got $8.2 million a year. That bodes well for Demko. But the Canucks, in a perfect world, need Demko to play between 55 to 60 games a year. This year, we have no idea how many games Demko is going to play. It's obviously up in the air. Next year, his games played will be a huge factor in his contract year. It'll determine the length of Demko's new deal. I think term could end up being more important than money in Demko's new contract with the Canucks. The Canucks need to see him play a lot of games before they hand out a long-term deal.
So that's Rick Dhaliwal earlier today on the Halford and Brough show speaking about Thatcher Demko's next contract and some of the complications around it. Now, as he points out, you know, Jeremy Swayman got a big deal. He hasn't been a workhorse goalie before. The big difference is, and I think he's exactly right, right, that term might be a much bigger deal if and when the Canucks are negotiating an extension with Thatcher Demko than the AAV. The big difference, of course, between Thatcher Demko and Jake Oettinger is age. You know, Demko will turn 29 in December, right? So you're looking at, by the time he's starting that new contract, you know, he's going to be just shy of 31 when he's going into that season. So if you're a goalie in that situation, you are going to be pretty motivated to get as much term as you can. If you're the Canucks and you know Thatcher Demko's injury history, and look, we'll see how it plays out in the intervening 18 months. That's obviously going to have a huge effect on things. That should make you pretty nervous, the prospect of going long term. So as much as we're looking at, well, these guys are setting the bar in terms of salary at, you know, 8.25 for a number one goalie. Again, it's the term. If Thatcher Demko thinks he can get more term somewhere at a lower AAV, that might make a lot of sense for him. But that could also be very, very risky for the Canucks. At any rate, as Rick said off the top of that clip, it is very early. And so much of this is going to be influenced by just how he looks and how many games he plays. Can he stay healthy between now and whenever it's time to negotiate that next deal? Can he be on the ice performing at a high level? Because if he's not, then all of this contract talk really becomes irrelevant. And it's something that's going to have to wait until he establishes that ability to stay on the ice, that ability to carry a starter's workload in the NHL. It doesn't have to be an extreme starter's workload, but just a starter's workload in the NHL. To the lineup notes for the whiteboard, a travel day today, so no update. I do just want to note, so the forward lines we saw to start the game yesterday, it was Arshdeep Bains still with JT Miller and Brock Besser. Then it was Pettersson with Garland and Hoglander in the top six. Jake DeBrusk bumped down to the bottom six. But what happens? We saw Tocchet load up the top six late again by moving DeBrusk up to play with Miller and Besser. And I think at this point, let's just start it like that, right? Those are your six best forwards. And by the way, Nils Hoglander, I mentioned this on Twitter, 16:37 time on ice at 5-on-5 last night. That's the most he's played in a game since his rookie season. Only cracked even 15 a couple of times last year. Those are bona fide top 6 minutes. It seems like Rick Tocchet trusts him in a way he did not last year. He's rewarding him with ice time. He's playing really well. So given that, I think you've got a very clear six best forwards right now, at least until Joshua returns. It's Miller, Besser, Pettersson, Garland, Hoglander, DeBrusk. Put him in your top six. Don't wait until late to load up the lines. Just open the game like that and see what they can do. I thought Jake DeBrusk had a pretty good game last night as well, actually. I think the points will come soon for Jake DeBrusk. Playoff update. Dom's model, we're doing it. Still has the Canucks at a 93% chance to make the playoffs. So basically, no impact from 500 out of the gate. Again, they're 500. See how much that win changes things? Now it's like, yeah, they're 500 after four games. Whatever. It's not even a big deal at all. 93% chance to make the playoffs per Dom's model and a 104-point projection. That's third in the Western Conference. So, again, basically holding steady as a top-tier team in the West per Dom's model. Betting odds, Canucks -137 road favorites against the Flyers tomorrow. We'll see how that line develops based on who's starting, all of those things. But, again, as I said, road favorites for the Canucks, yeah, they're on the road, but I think you'd rather be in their position from a travel and rest perspective than you would for the Flyers. So a bit of a sneaky opportunity for the Canucks to find a way to get 2 points against a Flyers team that's given them fits recently in Philadelphia tomorrow. That's the whiteboard for today. Kevin Woodley is going to join me on the line next. Always looking forward to chatting with Kevin Woodley. And as I said, at 1 o'clock, Landon Ferraro, Canucks analyst here for 650 and on Sportsnet TV. He'll be in studio with me from 1 to 2. So we'll go deep on the game, what he's seeing from the Canucks through the first four games here, what he wants to see going forward, and send your questions in as well. Anything you want to know, anything you want to hear from Landon, 650, 650. Hit us up, we'll flag it, and we'll run it past Landon a little later on in the show. But right now, Kevin Woodley joins me next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.